everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Silman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can be as well-informed as possible and make the best decisions for your health and well-being. I want to invite everyone who may be listening for the first time to be sure to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. I have some very special free reports you can access there, lots of articles, videos. It's a great portal to get wonderful information. It's all freely available. And also, go over to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, because I do daily postings of great information, articles, research, just keeping you on the leading edge so you really can be as knowledgeable as possible about things that really matter, particularly regarding your health. Well, today we're going to be talking about an epidemic. It's often a silent epidemic, actually, that is occurring throughout the United States. Actually, it has left the United States. The epidemic is going worldwide. And I'm talking about the epidemic of Lyme disease. Now, many of you may not have heard of Lyme disease. Many of you may be well acquainted, but we're going to give you the most in-depth understanding of what this condition is. In fact, we're going to be looking at the protocol and the solutions to a very devastating and debilitating condition. So to help us explore this topic of Lyme disease, we're very privileged today to have Dr. Richard Horowitz as my guest. He is a board-certified internist in private practice in Hyde Park, New York. He's the medical director of the Hudson Valley Healing Arts Center, an integrative medical center which combines both classical and complementary approaches in the treatment of chronic Lyme disease and other tick-borne disorders. He has treated over 12,000 chronic Lyme disease patients in the last 20 years, with patients coming from all over the U.S., Canada, and Europe in his clinic. He is former assistant director of medicine of Vassar Brothers Hospital, Poughkeepsie, New York, and is the former president-elect of the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. He now serves as president of the International Lyme and Associated Disease Educational Foundation, a nonprofit educational foundation whose mission is to educate health professionals in the diagnosis and treatment of tick-borne disorders. Dr. Horowitz has presented at numerous local, national, and international scientific conferences on Lyme disease and has published on the role of co-infections and toxins in chronic Lyme borreliosis. He was recently awarded Humanitarian of the Year by the Turn the Corner Foundation for his treatment of Lyme disease and has dedicated his life to helping those stricken with this devastating illness. And he is author of the new book, Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease. And it's my great pleasure to welcome you, Dr. Horowitz, to the show today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, this is a really important topic. It's a very profound discussion we are having today, and I'd like us to start at the very beginning, especially to help people who may not be aware of what Lyme disease is or may have heard the term, but they don't really appreciate what it may be. So let's start at the very beginning explaining, what is Lyme disease?
Well, Lyme disease is basically due to an infection from the bite of a tick. And you get an organism, a bacteria, called Borrelia burgdorferi. And this particular bacteria has been around, actually, for thousands of years. You may have heard that when they found Otzi, the Neanderthal man, they found the DNA of Borrelia in Otzi 5,000 years ago. So it's not actually a new infection. Borrelia has been around for a long time. But what I think has happened is now that people have gone into rural areas, the ticks are spreading, there are many different co-infections. What's happened is people now have gotten this infection. So what happens is you get the bite of an infected tick, this bacteria enters your skin, and then it can travel throughout your body, and it can enter all of the different parts of your body. It can enter your joints, your nerves, your central nervous system, your brain. So what happens is, depending on where the infection goes, you end up getting these different symptoms. So it's a multi-systemic illness. And what happens is most people will complain of fatigue, joint and muscle pain, tingling, numbness, and burning that will come and go and move around their body. They can't fall asleep. They frequently wake up in the middle of the night. They have memory, concentration problems. So the problem is that these symptoms can overlap other diseases, but Lyme disease is the great imitator. So what happens is these people are very, very ill. They see 10 to 20 doctors. They're told they have chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, some nonspecific autoimmune disorder like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, and they don't get better with standard treatment. And then they come to see me, and they're diagnosed with Lyme disease. And so we've got a big problem because the tests are not that reliable. It's a spreading epidemic, and it's mimicking all these different diseases. So it's a big, big problem in the United States and worldwide.
So the symptoms that you just described are the most common ones. Are there any other symptoms that may be associated with a Lyme infection that may be missed? In fact, most of the symptoms that people have with Lyme are missed because, as you said, it mimics so many other conditions and health issues.
Right. Well, yes, I mean, there are some very, very classic ways that you can know that you have Lyme disease. And if you go through the list of symptoms, there's a 38-item questionnaire, which I have in my book, and I've adjusted it. I give it out to my patients when they come to see me. And on this questionnaire, there's 38 different questions. In other words, 38 different symptoms they can present with. So the first one on the list is fevers, day sweats, night sweats, and chills. Now, that usually is due to another tick-borne infection called babesia, which is a malaria-type illness. So people that have day sweats, night sweats, and chills, and it might be interesting because women come in and tell me, you know, doc, I think I'm going through early menopause. I've got these sweats at night. And as a doctor, you rule them out for other reasons they have these sweats. You do a thyroid panel to make sure they don't have hyperthyroidism. You make sure they don't have associated diseases like non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or tuberculosis or brucellosis. You rule them out for other diseases, but a lot of times I'll find that over half the patients who come to me with Lyme have this other tick-borne infection called babesia, and they're much, much sicker when they get it. So if you happen to be a Lyme patient who presents with fatigue, and these are the hallmarks of the disease, the symptoms come and go. So if you have good and bad days where you're tired some days and you're not tired other days, and you have dizziness, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, memory and concentration problems, you walk into a room and you don't remember why you walked in, you're forgetting people's names and phone numbers that you would normally know, you're reversing letters. If you have these memory problems and you go to your doctor and they rule you out for low thyroid or vitamin deficiencies like B12 deficiency, and the doctor can't find a reason, and let's say you're a young woman who's got memory concentration problems with these sweats, then it's very likely you may end up having Lyme and babesia. But the other symptoms that are very classic is that the joint and muscle pain tends to move around the body. So if you have pain one day, for example, in your shoulder, and 3 days later in your knee, and 4 days later in your ankle, and it's moving around your body and roving around, and the same thing with the muscle pain, and even the same thing with what we call neuropathic pain, this tingling, numbness, and burning sensation, if it comes and goes and migrates, that is a very, very classic symptom of Lyme. It's not something you generally see with chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia. And then similarly, the patients will come in and tell me that they have chest pain, shortness of breath, palpitations, and they've gone to a cardiologist, and they do stress tests and echocardiograms and Holter monitors to look for the reasons why do they have this pain. It's a very classic symptom of Lyme. So you can get all of these different symptoms where you can't fall asleep, you're waking up in the middle of the night, you could be very anxious and depressed. Lyme can cause every psychiatric diagnosis seen in a DSM manual for doctors where we describe psychiatric conditions. So it's a very confusing illness because if you were never depressed or anxious before and you've got this multisystemic illness where you've got this cluster of classic presenting symptoms with the fatigue, the joint and muscle pain that's coming and going and migrating, nerve pain coming and going, I can't sleep, I'm anxious, I'm depressed, I have these sweats and chills. This multisystemic presentation is one way that you can know that it's Lyme disease, especially if your healthcare practitioner has ruled you out for other diseases.
Well, you know, it's just, you can see why people are so confused and can spend a fortune trying to track down the cause of these symptoms that can be so debilitating. I want to ask you, what is the cause of Lyme disease? Is it just a tick bite? Is it being out in nature and discovering that you have a tick on you? What is causing this epidemic?
Well, it is primarily transmitted by ticks. But the problem is that some of the ticks are very small. So, for example, the nymphal ticks, which is earlier in the springtime, are very small, kind of the size of a pinhead. So you might not see a tick bite from a nymph. Now, at this time of the year with the adults, they're a bit larger. But the problem is that even the larvae, which is the first stage of when the female ticks lay the eggs, and they can lay between 2,000 to 3,000 eggs in a two-year cycle. So the part of the reason we're having such a problem is, if you think about it, that you've got, 2,000 ticks being produced from one mother tick, which lays another 2,000 to 3,000 eggs. You're talking about an awful lot of ticks that are getting out there in the environment. So people that are out there that are hiking, going in the woods, I mean, you can even walk across your own lawn. You could go into Central Park and you could possibly get Lyme. The problem is these ticks are very small, and people don't recognize that they've ever been bitten. And there are now even new types of infections that are Lyme-like. For example, Borrelia burgdorferi is the organism of Lyme. But there's now another organism in the ticks, Borrelia miyamotoi, which is related to genetically to relapsing fever in Japan. Now, this particular organism looks like Lyme. It can cause a bullseye-type rash like Lyme. It can cause you to have meningoencephalitis, meaning you get a meningitis, you get a stiff neck, you get a headache, the light bothers your eyes, you might have a Bell's palsy, you could get all of these symptoms, but it's not Lyme. And in fact, if you do the blood test, you're not going to get a positive blood test by either what's called an ELISA, which is the first test that doctors usually do, or a Western blot, because it's a different strain of the organism. So it's a really big problem, because we've got 100 strains of Lyme disease in the United States, and you've got over 300 strains in the world, and the test that we're usually using to diagnose this is looking at one strain. So that is in part why I use a lab in California called Igenix that looks at least two strains of the organism, and we find that the testing is a bit more reliable. But it is primarily from a tick bite. The only other way that you would normally get it, which we need to be concerned about in women, is especially passing it on to children, because it can be transmitted from a mother to the fetus. And in fact, I have women who have miscarried because they didn't know that they had Lyme disease, and we ended up finding on biopsies after they miscarried that the DNA, it's called the PCR, polymerase chain reaction, the DNA of Borrelia was present in the cord blood, was present in the placenta. So this is actually a really bad problem for women, and OBGYNs need to be aware of the fact that if a woman comes to them and they're presenting with a multisystemic illness or have had a tick bite during the pregnancy, that is another way that someone could get Lyme. It could be transmitted from the mother to the fetus. So those would be the two primary ways, but other tick-borne infections like babesia that I was describing before, which is malaria-like, that is now in the blood supply, as is anaplasma, another tick-borne disease. So there are multiple routes now that people can get these different tick-borne disorders, and it's really becoming a big problem.
Why does this seem to be such a big epidemic at this point in time? You know, there's in the history of Lyme, there was that time, I guess it was in the 70s, I believe, when those children were found near Lyme, Connecticut, with those symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis, and then it seems to have spread. But this wasn't always present in our society, in our culture, was it?
No, I mean, it probably was in low level. I mean, even in Europe in the 1800s, they were finding this syndrome called Banworth syndrome, and that was Lyme disease, even in the late 1800s. I think it's been around for a while, but I think the problem now is that the ticks are containing these multiple different infections called co-infections, like anaplasma, Ehrlichia, babesia, Bartonella, cat scratch fever is now in the ticks. So let's say you get a tick bite, you could get Lyme and Bartonella at the same time, and it makes you much sicker. Your brain fog, your memory, concentration problems would be much worse. Your nerve pain, your tingling, numbness, and burning with Lyme and Bartonella could be much worse. It could cause the new onset of seizures in someone who's never had it. And you've got other tick-borne infections like Rocky Mountain spotted fever, typhus, Q fever. So there's all these different tick-borne infections that I don't know that they were around hundreds of years ago, and we're now even finding viral infections that are starting to appear in the ticks that can be deadly. In fact, in New York State, where we live, they showed about 4 years ago there was a virus which can cause an encephalitis. This means a swelling of the brain, an inflammation of the brain tissue, and it was called Powassan encephalitis, and it was present in about 10 to 15% of the cases. It would cause mortality. It would cause death. And only about 1 to 2% of the ticks had it in 1999. And now in a recent study, up to 5 to 6% of the ticks 4 years later contained this virus. So if you get a tick bite, you could not just get Lyme and anaplasma and babesia, but you could also get a deadly viral infection. So we're talking about all of these different infections now present in ticks that are making people sick. And I think it's part of the reason that people are having such a tough time with the disease, apart from the fact that I've noticed their immune systems are not working real well. We're now exposed to a lot of environmental toxins, like mercury and lead in the environment. And the problem is, if you look at mercury toxicity, it causes exactly the same symptoms that you get with Lyme disease. It can cause fatigue, headaches, memory problems, psychiatric problems, tingling, numbness, and burning. And I'm finding a lot of my patients have these types of environmental toxins. They can't detoxify the toxins getting into their body. So you've got this major overlap where in my book I describe it as Lyme MCIDS, and MCID stands for Multiple Systemic Infectious Disease Syndrome. And what it is that the people who come to see me, the reason they're so sick is they don't just have Lyme. They basically got up to 16 different reasons, 16 potential overlapping medical problems which contribute to their persistent symptoms. So, you know, the first point on this MCIDS model is infections. And as I said, it's not just Lyme. Lyme is a bacteria, but there are other bacteria, viruses, and parasites like Babesia, which you could get at the same time as Borrelia, the agent of Lyme. And I don't know that, you know, 100 years ago, you would have gotten all these different infections. But then you've got people with immune dysfunction, inflammation in their body, these environmental toxins and heavy metals, nutritional deficiencies. If you're not eating well and you're zinc deficient, you cannot fight these infections properly. And Lyme will throw off the hormones in the body. The pituitary, the master gland of the body, can be affected. So women will go into early menopause. Men will have low testosterone. Their adrenal glands are affected, where if my patients have low adrenals, I can give them all the antibiotics or herbs that I want. They're not going to get better. And they've got food allergies, and they're deconditioned, and they don't fall asleep. So what you're dealing with, and this is why it's been so confusing for doctors, after seeing 12,000 of these chronically ill people, I've discovered this 16-point model that shows why people are sick. So it's like going into a doctor with 16 nails in your foot complaining of foot pain, and the doctor only finds one or two nails and pulls them out, and the patient comes back a month later and says, "Doc, I still have pain in my foot." And that's because you didn't identify all of the nails. And that's what my book describes. It describes in detail all of the 16 reasons that I have found seeing these 12,000 chronically ill people. Why are you still sick? Why are you not getting better? And it really is applicable pretty much to anyone with chronic diseases, whether it's chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or an autoimmune disease like MS, because Lyme mimics all of these diseases. And even if you didn't get Lyme, you still may have other infections. You still may have immune dysfunction. Your hormones may be off. You may have nutritional deficiencies. But doctors are not taught to think in terms of that there is a multifactorial cause for illness. They're taught in medical school what's called Pasteur's postulate, that there's one cause for one illness. But this just doesn't apply to patients with chronic Lyme symptoms. So we really need to redefine chronic Lyme disease as Lyme MCIDS, because that would more accurately reflect these multiple underlying etiologies responsible for these persistent symptoms in patients.
So we're vulnerable at this point in time because everything in our environment is challenging our health. As you were saying, our immune system is challenged through nutritional deficiencies, toxicities, stress, electromagnetic frequencies. I mean, you name it. These are the insults and assaults that are occurring 24/7 for us in our modern 21st century world. And our body is becoming very vulnerable.
Yes, and I think, you know, doctors who are trained in medicine, I mean, they don't always go looking, for example, for nutritional deficiencies. But here's the problem I face. So my patients come in and they tell me they've seen 10 to 20 doctors, they're still sick. And I do a standard blood panel and I look for magnesium deficiency, both in the blood and inside the red cells. And I check them for copper deficiency, iodine deficiency, zinc deficiency. I'm finding that 25% of the people who come to see me are nutritionally deficient. So even if they're trying to eat according to the American Cancer Society standards of, you know, 9 servings of fruits and vegetables, which almost no one can literally get to, we're finding that the soil is now depleted and not containing the minerals that you need. So let's say you're magnesium deficient. You need magnesium in 300 different enzymes in your body to detoxify. So you won't get rid of these chemicals that overlap your Lyme symptoms if you're magnesium deficient, or may find, for example, that you have muscle spasms or you have back pain and asthma and irritable bowel, all related to magnesium deficiency. Or, for example, if you're zinc deficient, as I said, your immune system won't function correctly, and you can even get a backup in your system where it's called the phase one pathways in the liver. Your liver gets rid of these chemicals in 2 stages in the liver. Part of that first stage of detoxification will not work well if you have zinc deficiencies and you get these toxin buildup in your body. So when you look at the fact that we are exposed to EMFs and all of these chemicals in the environment, people are not realizing these are fat-soluble chemicals. They're getting into our body. Our brain is mostly made up of fat. It can affect your memory. And many of my patients come in with, you know, chemical sensitivities with environmental illness, where, again, they've got up to these 16 points keeping them sick. So this model that I'm proposing in the book is really a new model for the healthcare practitioner and for patients realizing that in the 21st century, you've got to look at a multifactorial reason, because many of my patients have food allergies. And I was not aware with food sensitivities, for example, that if you had leaky gut and you had taken antibiotics in the past and now your gut is hyperpermeable, and large molecules of the food are getting across your intestinal barrier in your blood, and you're forming antibodies, I didn't really know that that would cause inflammation in the body and cause joint pain and muscle pain and headaches and fatigue. This is not something really I was initially taught in medical school. It was only going to integrative conferences and learning integrative medicine that I learned to use these different ideas and found out that, in fact, inflammation is the number one reason that people are staying ill. In fact, with all chronic disease, it's so interesting to me, you know, 70% of all of the healthcare costs and in the United States and the deaths in the United States are due to chronic disease. And we do not have a chronic disease model. So the 16-point model may actually apply to most of the chronic diseases, which is, even if you never had Lyme disease, but you've been diagnosed with chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia, you want to go looking for food allergies and sensitivities and nutritional deficiencies and immune dysfunction and get your sleep in order and your autonomic nervous system, the part of the body that controls blood pressure and heart rate, that can be thrown off by these infections. You've got to look now as a patient who's sick, who's not getting better, you've got to look at all of these different underlying etiologies that could be responsible for your persistent symptoms. So I'm very excited about this because it really may represent a paradigm shift, considering that chronic disease is something that is really affecting all of us and our families. And, you know, we're looking at the healthcare burden of cost in the United States being overwhelming. It's 70%, 75% of the healthcare cost is chronic disease. People are getting sick with these diseases all the time. I'm excited about now working with this model, which I validated in my clinic, and I'm now going to try moving it out and seeing if, you know, the CDC or the NIH or someone private is willing to fund this model, just like they did with the Framingham studies years ago, where they studied doctors and nurses for 30 years. I mean, we have a cancer epidemic. We have an autism epidemic, where 1 in 88 children are coming down with autism. 1 in 3 women are getting cancer, 1 in 2 men. I mean, we're talking about Alzheimer's epidemics, all of these epidemics, and yet all we're able to do in medicine is basically throw drugs at them at this point to try and help their memory. They don't really know what autism is. Well, what I'm finding, having in fact gone to the autism conferences and speaking to the doctors there, is that they have found that using the same type of model that I'm using may help some of these autistic children. So this model, for me, really, I think, is going to be the next stage in a paradigm shift for chronic disease. And anyone who is not feeling well, you should not say that I'm just getting old, you know, I'm stressed, I don't sleep. You really should look at this model, because it's very possible that many of the different factors on this model may be causing your persistent symptoms.
You know, as a naturopathic doctor, this is the paradigm that we operate in. We always look at root cause issues and looking at all the different systems that are out of balance. And I'm thrilled to hear that you have had your epiphany and bringing this new paradigm into the medical world, because you're right. You cannot heal unless you integrate all systems together and understand those underlying root cause issues.
Right, and you know, it's just not right. I mean, I was a board certified internist, moved up to the Hudson Valley. I'm normally from Bayside, Queens. You know, and I decided, oh, it would be nice to move to the river and the mountains. So I moved upstate, about 2 hours into the Hudson Valley near Poughkeepsie, New York. And I didn't realize I was walking into the largest Lyme epidemic, basically not just New York State, pretty much almost the United States. So, you know, as a doctor, you get these patients coming into your office, and they go from doctor to doctor telling you that they're ill. And the healthcare system basically does not have answers. There's this basic controversy that's been going on now in medicine between two groups, the infectious disease doctors, called the Infectious Disease Society of America, the IDSA, and ILADS, the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, of which I was one of the founding members. So unfortunately, what's happened for patients is if you go to a doctor who believes in the infectious disease way of treating this, they're going to tell you the blood tests are reliable. They're going to tell you that 30 days of antibiotics cures it, but unfortunately, from my perspective, it's just not true. I mean, if you get Lyme early, if you were lucky enough to see a bullseye rash, and by the way, 50% of the people do not get bullseye rashes, and 50% of the people, they don't even look like bullseyes. They look like solid, red, spreading rashes, which many times the doctors mistake for a cellulitis, for a bacterial infection in the skin, for a spider bite. So some of these people aren't even treated. So if you're lucky enough to see a bullseye rash and get treated, you can be cured in up to 75% of the cases. Then you can actually cure this disease. But from my perspective, these people who've seen me, who've been sick for years, it's not easy to cure. I mean, you've got to go after these 16 points that I'm discussing in my book so that you get these people better. But it's such a shame that the healthcare system has these people go from doctor to doctor without answers, and that's in part why I've devoted my life to helping these people, because my spiritual teachers, when I was coming out of med school, the most important thing that they said to me was, when I went to my meditation teacher, as I said, you know, Lama, what do you want to teach me? And he said, Richard, the most important thing you need to know in medicine coming out is compassion. Exchange yourself with the other person, put yourself in their shoes, and do for them what you would want done for yourself. And it's so interesting, because all I've done is try and help people in the last 26 years doing this. And just by not giving up and looking for answers, I've come upon this 16-point model that is now helping 90 to 95% of my chronically ill people. So it's fascinating that just, you know, looking for answers, not giving up, and there is hope for these people, and they need to understand this, that if you've been suffering with these chronic illnesses, whether it's been called chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia or MS, because the majority of the people who come to me with those diagnoses, they in fact have Lyme disease and associated infections, as well as a lot of the things on the 16-point MSIDS model that I was describing to you. So I think this really is going to be a paradigm shift. I think it's just going to be a question now of getting this model validated in large medical centers so that it can be, you know, well integrated into the medical system.
So what are your thoughts about the relationship of a Lyme infection and Alzheimer's and possibly cancers as well?
Well, that's a great question. So here's my concern about Alzheimer's. So from what I've read, we're in the middle of also an Alzheimer's epidemic, just like autism, cancer, Lyme disease, and it's going to supposedly bankrupt our medical system by 2030. So what's interesting about Alzheimer's is that when they did studies on Lyme, Dr. Alan McDonald did studies years ago where he took brain biopsies of patients with Alzheimer's from the National Institutes of Health data bank. And these people were clearly diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and he found that 70% of these patients who had Alzheimer's had Lyme disease, Borrelia burgdorferi, in their brain. So it's very possible that Lyme is one of the cofactors. Now, I don't think in Alzheimer's, in many of these diseases, it's going to end up being the only cause. My take at this point, looking at the MCIDS model of 16 points for chronic illness, is that what we might be looking at is we might be looking at many different factors that stimulate inflammation in the body. So, for example, I was just in Arizona 2 weeks ago at a conference I was presenting at for the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. And I'm sitting listening to this doctor who's talking about young children in Mexico City who died at 13 or 14 years old in a car accident or for some other cause. And they did brain biopsies, and they found that they had early Alzheimer's changes in these kids living in Mexico City at 13 years old. Now, why would that be happening? Well, if you look at the pollutants getting into the system, whether it's mercury, whether it's lead, whether it's volatile organic solvents, PCBs, dioxins, pesticides, plastics, all of these different chemicals cause inflammation in the body. And we know that Alzheimer's disease is caused by inflammation. We know that the beta amyloid plaques, these plaques you find in the brains of Alzheimer's patients, is caused by inflammation and, in fact, makes the inflammation worse. So if you think about it, if you've got environmental toxins, which are now accumulating, we've got 300 to 500 environmental toxins getting into our body every day. And if you're genetically predisposed with the APOE gene, and you then get Lyme disease, and you then get, for example, some mercury toxicity, which causes memory concentration problems, and other infections, what you might be dealing with is you might be dealing with, what is Alzheimer's? It might be, in fact, a multifactorial illness where mercury and environmental toxins and Lyme disease and other infections are causing this inflammation in the brain. And I suspect in years going forward, that's what we're probably going to find out. So if the government and our health authorities are really interested in stemming this epidemic also of Alzheimer's, what you need to do is you need to start looking at all the causes of inflammation. And what's interesting to me when I finished writing this book is I discovered that many of the factors on this 16-point MCIDS model, such as patients who have infections causes inflammation, they've got immune dysfunction. The inflammatory molecules that are produced in Lyme, which are called cytokines, they're inflammation. It's like having a fire in your body. Tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin-1, IL-6. Believe it or not, these are the same inflammatory molecules that are found in Alzheimer's. And they found in studies that if you were to block these inflammatory molecules like tumor necrosis factor alpha, Alzheimer's patients' brains would wake up. Their memory would be much better just by blocking these cytokines, these inflammatory molecules. And what I found in my Lyme patients is if I detoxify them and give them something like glutathione, which is made by your liver, it's one of the 6 pathways in the liver of how you get rid of chemicals and toxins, I find that within minutes, sometimes a half hour, my patients say to me, "Doc, my fatigue is better. My joint and muscle pain's better. My brain fog, my memory and concentration is better," just by detoxing them. So we really need to look at multifactorial causes. As I said earlier, this pastor's postulate that there's one cause for one illness that was taught to doctors in the 1800s, this is the 21st century. We are now exposed to multiple causes for chronic disease, and I believe that this MCIDS model is going to apply to many chronic diseases like Alzheimer's, and cancer, I don't think really it's any different. All of these chemicals getting into the body, as you know well, they're foreign-based estrogens. They're called xenoestrogens. So what do? They basically will hit the estrogen receptors, and they've been shown to be responsible for breast cancer, uterine cancer, cervical cancer, prostate cancer, thyroid cancer, colon cancer. It's been linked up to all these environmental toxins. So if you eat a healthy diet with lots of cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, garlic, what happens is you shift these estrogens, these foreign-based estrogens, from the bad estrogens that hurt your body to the good estrogens. That's part of the reason that we're talking about needing so many good fruits and vegetables as an alkaline diet, alkalizing the body, shifting these foreign-based estrogens, so important. Because we're looking at all of these infections and toxins getting into people's bodies. And I believe that's really, apart from genetics and apart from viruses, which we know also cause cancer, I think it's going to be multifactorial in that, you know, nutrition and diet and infections, things we're not looking at right now with these toxins, this is going to be the missing link as to why we're seeing all of these epidemics that are now happening in the world.
Well, it's kind of a blinding flash of the obvious, isn't it?
I mean, it is after you've been, I mean, look, you're a naturopathic doc. You learned this when you went through med school. I did not. I had to figure this stuff out on my own. You know, my parents died of cancer. My whole family, six aunts and uncles, died of cancer. And I don't know what is genetic. I don't know whether they were smokers living in Brooklyn when they grew up, where there was, you know, some chemical plants that they live near. But I've been studying this for years because patients do come to me with cancer. And it's unclear at this point. You know, when you look at these epidemics, you say to yourself as a doctor, well, what can I do? Not just to help the people now, but what can you do for future generations to stem these epidemics of cancer and Alzheimer's and autism and Lyme? Because it's multiple epidemics, and I think we need to really broaden our horizon to look at the 16-point model as I'm talking about that's described in the book, because it amazed me as I kept looking as a medical detective over the last 26 years to find out why are these people chronically ill. It turned out that it overlaps with cancer rates and everything else that's going on. So it is blindingly obvious, except, you know, doctors don't believe it unless you've got double-blind placebo-controlled studies. And you and I both know in our lifetime they're just not going to do those studies. So, you know, I'm suppose 100 years from now, you know, what's going to happen, Cheryl, is they're going to tell people, well, so Mrs. Jones, did you go for your pap? Did you go for your mammography? Did you go for your pap smear? Mr. Jones, did you go for your colonoscopy, pap, you know, your prostate exam? And are you in your sauna detoxing? Because they'll realize 100 years from now that if you want to stay healthy, you have got to sweat these toxins out of your body. But medicine will not do this. They will not tell people to regularly do this, because even if you read about, you know, from the CDC, they published the studies. The Environmental Protection Agency did a study back in 1982 called the National Adipose Tissue Survey. They took fat biopsies from Americans from New York to California and found that every American in the United States had PCBs, dioxins, plastics, pesticides, carcinogenic substances, all well known, and yet, you know, no one's linking it up to cancer because you can't say that each one of these individually or in combination is doing it. But if you look at the data, it's certainly suggestive, and it's certainly suggestive enough for me as a doctor to say to my patients, look, detox and treating infections is probably the two things that we're missing in medicine right now, that we've got these chronic infections that no one's really looking at that are persisting in the body. Lyme disease, Babesia, Bartonella, Mycoplasma. I'm finding all these infections persisting in people who come to me with Lyme disease. And then you've got these environmental toxins. So these may be the missing link that we're looking for all of these chronic diseases.
Well, I'm sure it is. And before we take a break, I just want to make a comment where you've really inspired me, because I actually do genomic testing. I look at those genes that have to do with inflammation, with phase one, with phase two, with oxidative stress, with methylation. I have seen actually hundreds of people now that I've been working with, and I see how compromised we are on that genomic level. These gene expressions are compromised, so we are very inefficient at being able to manage these key functions, because unless we are compensating for what these genetic weaknesses are, we're going to be very vulnerable to inflammation, impaired detoxification, oxidative stress, and on, everything that you are seeing with your patients. So these are all proactive tests that can help people take action now because they see it very clearly in their genes, and they can put some protocols into place to support them for the long term.
Yes. Yes, and I see exactly the same thing that you do.
Yeah. So this is a good moment to take a break. We are talking to Dr. Richard Horowitz. He is the author of Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Illness. Don't go away. We're going to be right back. Hi, welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Thank you for joining me. You are listening to What Women Must Know. Today we're having a most fascinating and important conversation with Dr. Richard Horowitz. He is the author of Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease. Dr. Horowitz, do you have a website?
We're just putting one up. I think my office manager, Christina, finally got it in place. Our email is www.medical@HVHAC, which stands for the Hudson Valley Healing Arts Center, HVHAC.com. So I think she's got the website up. I've been so busy with this book, I haven't really had a chance to work on it much, but it should be fully functional enough. Yes, I actually will.
Way overdue.
Yes. Tell me about it. Many things in my life are way overdue at this point.
Hey, listen. Okay. You've presented a really compelling picture, and actually, it's quite scary, I think, for most people because we all know we're compromised. We're under stress. We're eating poorly. We don't get enough sleep. So I guess what I'd like to ask you, and by the way, you're only one person, so if people are recognizing these symptoms, what should they do? What should they do in terms of where do they go for help? How can they get the kind of guidance and assistance from people who understand what you are talking about?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the first step really is, because Lyme is a multi-systemic illness, if they take the questionnaire, I believe it's on page 34 of my book, this questionnaire, which is called the Lyme-MCITS questionnaire, what I found in my patients is that they come to me and they check off a lot of these symptoms on the questionnaire. So since Lyme is multi-systemic, if patients have this classic cluster of presenting symptoms, such as fatigue, joint and muscle pain that's coming and going and moving around the body, this nerve pain, tingling, numbness, burning, coming, going, moving around the body, day sweats, night sweats, chills, can't fall asleep, keep waking up in the middle of the night, dizzy, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, I'm anxious, I'm depressed, memory, concentration problems. If you have most of these symptoms, what you'll find is that in my questionnaire, you'll score 46 or higher. And we found that 46 was 2 standard deviations, so statistically significant, that there was a very high likelihood of having Lyme. So what do you then do? Well, here's the problem. The Lyme testing is not very reliable. So if your doctor was to do the first test called an ELISA, E-L-I-S-A, an ELISA test, this just basically looks for the antibodies for Lyme. But the problem with the test is it's not a very sensitive test. It's only going to pick it up in about 50% of the cases, and in my case, with my patients, I'd say probably less. So what you want to do is you want to basically do a Western blot. Now, if you do it through some of the standard laboratories, like LabCorp or Quest, which is fine, the problem is they only screen for this one strain of Lyme that we discussed in the United States called the B31 strain. So you've got to get the lab to report what are called the bands on the Western blot. And what I do with my patients is I play a game called Lyme Bingo. And I tell them, before the Western blot comes back, if you have any one of 5 numbers, these are proteins, they're called bands on the Western blot. If you have any one of these 5 numbers that shows up on a Western blot, and you have a multisystemic illness, and you've scored high in the questionnaire, and your doctor has ruled you out for other diseases, then bingo, you have Lyme disease. Now, what are these numbers? And this is really important that people listening take this down. These 5 numbers are the following. The 23, this is the outer surface protein C. It's a part of a protein on the outside of the organism. So 23, very important. 31 is the outer surface protein A. 34, outer surface protein B. 39, and the 8393. So 23, 31, 34, 39, 83/93. So these are very specific proteins for Borrelia burgdorferi, the organism that causes Lyme. Now, if you don't get back a positive Western blot through Quest or LabCorp, and your doctor has ruled you out for all other reasons why you're staying chronically ill, you may want to get your test done to other labs that look for Lyme differently. So, for example, Igenex Laboratories in California, they're licensed in New York State, they pass all their proficiency exams. We find when we do our Western blot to Igenex using an IgM, which is usually considered to be an early test for Lyme, although interestingly enough, you see it in late Lyme, and an IgG. If you do an IgM and an IgG Western blot, you may find that some of these bands will come back positive, but you don't interpret the test based on CDC criteria. And this is where a lot of the doctors have the problem. The CDC criteria, and this is put up on the website, is that that is only for health departments to epidemiologically screen large populations of people. It was not meant to make an individual clinical diagnosis. And the CDC says this, but unfortunately, the insurance companies have picked up on this, and they train the doctors that that's how you make the diagnosis. And that's why this epidemic, in part, has gotten so bad, because you have this spreading tick-borne problem, and you've got unreliable tests. So unless you use certain laboratories, you're not going to pick this up. Now, there's other ways of also finding Lyme. You can do DNA testing, which is called PCR, polymerase chain reaction. You can do cultures. There's a lab, Advanced Laboratories, that Dr. Borscano now helped create. They're looking at this lab to look at cultures for Borrelia, where they grow it out in a petri dish in the microscope. That's the gold standard of Lyme. They have other tests like a lymphocyte transformation test showing that your immune system can recognize and has recognized an infection with Lyme. So if you were to do an ELISA, a Western blot, a DNA test, a PCR, a culture, a lymphocyte transformation test, there are many tests that you can use to try and make the diagnosis. And as a Lyme doc, what I do is I also throw out the net for all these other tick-borne infections. So if a patient comes to see me, I will check them for the most common tick-borne infections associated with Lyme. I'll check them for ehrlichiosis, anaplasmosis. Now, this is a disease that in the summertime, you'll get a high fever, a stiff neck, really bad headache, very bad joint and muscle pain, tremendous fatigue, and you go to your doctor and your white cell count is low. Your platelet count is low. Your liver functions are high. There are very specific markers for Ehrlichia anaplasma. And then there's Babesia, this malaria-like organism. Well, that you also have to do a panel of tests. There's different tests like titers, a fish test, which is looking for the RNA of the bug under the microscope. It's through Igenex Labs. There's DNA tests. You look for Bartonella, cat scratch fever, mycoplasma species, because they're now found in ticks, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Q fever, typhus, tularemia. You've actually got to send out a panel looking for all these different tick-borne infections, because I've been very surprised that when someone says to me, "Doc, I think I just have Lyme," I find that they have many of these different tick-borne co-infections, and that's part of the reason that people are staying ill. And unfortunately, in the double-blind placebo-controlled studies that some of the infectious disease doctors are quoting, saying, you know, Lyme doesn't persist, 30 days of antibiotics, you know, gets rid of it and you don't need more, what they have not realized is that these people with these other tick-borne co-infections like Babesia, this malaria organism, or Bartonella, mycoplasma, it's making these people very ill. And then when you've got these environmental toxins and you can't detoxify them, and nutritional deficiencies and hormone problems, and you're deconditioned, they didn't study that in this double-blind placebo-controlled study. So that is why you've got to go to a doctor who is Lyme literate. In fact, I find many of the integrative doctors and naturopathic doctors, because I've done training for the NDs, I've done several conferences for them, and I think they're very open-minded, they're very Lyme literate and knowledgeable, that integrative doctors, if you can't get help with a regular doctor, You should find someone who knows integrative medicine, who also may be board certified in their field, because they understand the 16-point model that I'm describing. And they may find that they can get some of those clues, because what you were describing before with detoxification and methylation, many of the doctors who are trained in normal medical schools, they learn it, but they don't really integrate it into their practice, and it's really quite important.
So, I know we're coming to the end of our interview, and I have so many questions. Can you be healed of Lyme disease?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, it's a perfect question. Can you be cured versus can you be healed? I believe you can be healed. 90 to 95% of my patients I can successfully treat. Some get a little bit better, some get moderately better, some get significantly better, and some come to me after being sick for many years saying, Doc, I feel 100% better, I feel great. And then there's about 5 to 7% of my patients that no matter how hard I try, I just can't get these people better. So there is healing, but curing may be difficult at this point if you have chronic Lyme. Now, I'm looking, and I plan on doing this. I hope I will get funding. Because the next stage of my life, as this book just got released a week ago, I would like to do some studies on some integrative protocols for curing Lyme disease. Because I think that some of the clues that I've discovered over time is that these organisms, these bacteria, can hide in the body. So you can expect herbs and antibiotics, if they're hiding in biofilms, we have biofilms on our teeth. That's the plaque on your teeth. And you know that unless you go to the dentist and take off the plaque, you can't get rid of the bacteria. Well, they're now finding in Lyme disease, they're in biofilms. They're deep inside the tissues of your body where the antibiotics and herbs may not penetrate. They go inside the cells. They have cystic forms, a way that it goes dormant and can hide in the body for years. You can't expect that the present methods we're using to try and cure Lyme are going to get rid of every last bacteria. But in fact, you don't really need to. As long as your immune system kind of can be stronger and you can deal with the immune dysfunction that you get from Lyme with these overstimulated immune systems, if you can lower the load of the bacteria, lower the load of the parasites, take down the inflammation, get rid of some of these environmental toxins, detoxify them, get their nutritional deficiencies in order, balance the hormones, get them to sleep, deal with the mitochondrial dysfunction, the part of your body that makes energy, can be affected by these free radicals, oxidative stress, so it keeps you tired. Deal with the food allergies. Get the imbalances in your nervous system, your autonomic nervous system, balanced. If you can do all of these things, you can be healed. Cured, I think I need research, and I'm going to need grant money, because I think I know some of the tricks as to how we can cure this, because they've shown in prior scientific studies, for example, that Lyme and spirochetal infections are sensitive to heat. So there may be certain tricks, because my patients have gone to integrative clinics across the world, and I've listened to the type of therapies they've done by these integrative doctors, and I've heard that they're coming back better. So if we're really going to address this epidemic of these tick-borne disorders, we need to look at different integrative ways of dealing with this epidemic, and I think actually I've got some clues, so I'm excited about taking this research and moving it, you know, to the next level, so we can, in fact, find a cure. So there's hope for these people. They definitely can be healed, and people need to know I've had tremendous success using the model that's in my book, and we will be looking for a cure as time goes on, so they should not give up.
So can you share, you know, maybe six top things that people can start incorporating into their lives, into their diet, that will support their body to prevent their vulnerability or support them if they are dealing with a Lyme infection?
Sure. So, for example, many of us who have viruses, they reactivate when you get Lyme. So if you have immune dysfunction, you can use certain nutritional supplements that raise up the part of your immune system called the natural killer cells and T cells that go after viruses and cancer cells. And examples would be things like transfer factors that come from colostrum from the mother's milk. There's also 3,6-beta-glucan, which is a mushroom derivative. Very powerful. I'm sure you use it. Very powerful. I take some every morning myself to boost up my immunity. And the reason this makes sense is because Lyme, you get what's called a Th2 reaction. You have a lot of antibodies produced, which causes this immune dysfunction. you need to shift away from this Th2 reaction where you've got a lot of antibodies to a different type of immune functioning, and it helps if you use things like transfer factors, some of these mushroom derivatives like 3,6-beta-glucan. Regarding inflammation and free radicals, oxidative stress, we have found that if we use things like turmeric, curcumin, resveratrol, the red wine extracts, because I don't personally drink. I don't feel well with alcohol at all. It gives me headaches and makes me fall asleep from my blood sugar swings. So I use these natural supplements for inflammation. And I will give people a compounded drug called low-dose naltrexone. And this is really an amazing medicine, which is virtually side-effect-free, which has been shown to be published in fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease, multiple sclerosis. This will regulate some of this immune dysfunction and inflammation in the body. You then can get into a sauna, assuming you don't have any medical problems that would interfere, so you can detox these toxins that get into your body. You eat a lot of healthy diets, an alkaline diet with a lot of organic, fresh fruits and vegetables, a lot of broccoli compounds. And some people, because the glutathione pathways, which is one of these major pathways in the body, doesn't work, you could take certain nutritional supplements like N-acetylcysteine, NAC, 600 milligrams twice a day, with some alpha-lipoic acid. Both of these supplements will help regenerate glutathione and help your body to make glutathione. So as these toxins are coming into your body, your own glutathione pathways will attach to these fat-soluble molecules, make them water-soluble, and you can get them out of your body. So if you were to do these type of things and get your hormones tested to make sure that your adrenals are not low, that you're not tired because you have low testosterone, low female hormones, low adrenal, low growth hormone. If you balance your hormones and take certain nutritional supplements, mitochondrial dysfunction, get rid of those food allergens, heal your leaky gut. If you do these things and get into a good exercise program, getting to sleep on time, getting up early, maybe doing some meditation and stress reduction techniques, which you know I teach to my patient all the time, these are things, so even if you're not sick, and you were to apply the 16-point model in the book, you can pull out from each chapter the things that you can do to support your body. So in case you were to get a virus, in case you were to get Lyme disease, in case you have more of these toxins getting in, your body can adequately handle it so you might not get sick the same way.
And this is just common sense that we're all learning, is we need to be proactive with our health. We actually have to get into action. We need to understand the importance of supporting our body with good nutrition, making the lifestyle changes. It's the highest priority, and we can't ignore it. And we don't want to arrive at a place where our body is so compromised that we're vulnerable to these infections. We need to stay strong now.
Right, and people don't realize that just eating the wrong diet, I mean, many people are gluten sensitive, as you know, or have true celiac disease, and if they get off, you know, gluten and they get off their food allergens and they eat a lot of fruits and vegetables with an alkaline diet, a lot of these people will feel better just getting off their sensitive foods and getting off gluten in their diet. I mean, sometimes just pulling out one of these nails in the foot, that's the biggest nail that makes a difference with their health. So you can't ignore with these infections and toxins getting into the body the importance of diet and nutrition and getting the sugar out of your diet. You know, so many of my patients have metabolic syndrome, prediabetes. You know, the carbohydrates basically are just basically killing people at this point in time. We've got to get the sugars out. Some people feel great on paleo-type diets. You know, the diet, the nutrition, the exercise, getting to sleep, meditating for stress reduction, these are all really, really important things you can do to keep your body healthy as we're exposed to all of these challenges in the 21st century.
Well, this has been such an enlightening conversation, Dr. Richard Horowitz. Thank you for your passion for being a heretic. I love it. And congratulations on your new book, Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Illness and Chronic Disease. I recommend it to everybody, whether you're dealing with a chronic disease or not, because the points that you've written in this book, Dr. Horowitz, are really the keys to helping to heal, rejuvenate, and regenerate all of our bodies.
Yes, I believe so, and I really hope that this will be the new paradigm for doctors. I mean, you as naturopaths, as I said, learned this years ago. we as internists and some of the other doctors never got it. But once I really saw the importance of these things, I think, you know, the medical system is just, it's in disarray at this point. It's costing people so much money. So many people are getting chronic illness. We need to empower people, and you started your show empowering it. This book empowers people. It gives them the science to understand their bodies and to understand the steps to take so they can stay healthy.
Well, thank you for the wonderful work, and all the best. Bye for now.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you, Cheryl.
And thank you for listening. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.